We all feel in need of your prayers, blessing and help of the Lord. Desire not to speak of man's ideas or thinking, but as the oracles of God, we'd be able to understand what thus saith the Lord. Thankful for the privilege to be here for the meeting. I'm thankful that we can trust Jesus, and so thankful to see young people who are testifying to having found that already to be the case. That'll serve each one of us well throughout our lives. I'd like to consider tonight the thought, by the Lord's help, of marginal living. Marginal living. I'd like to begin in the book of Exodus. Nineteenth chapter of the book of Exodus. Let's begin in the 7th verse. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people, and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, "All that the Lord has spoken we will do." And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee, and believe thee forever." And Moses told the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Go unto the people, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and be ready against the third day. For the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. And thou shalt set bounds unto the people round about, saying, Take heed to yourselves, that ye go not up into the mount, or touch the border of it. Whosoever toucheth the mount shall be surely put to death. There shall not an hand touch it, but he shall surely be stoned, or shot through. Whether it be beast or man, it shall not live. When the trumpet soundeth long, they shall come up to the mount." And so the people prepared themselves for the meeting of the Lord, for him to come down and speak to them through a cloud, as it were, as he wasn't able to reveal himself at that time in dispensation directly to them face to face. But what a glory was revealed by the presence of the Lord. Whenever the Lord came down upon the mountain, all man took notice of it. All of them that were there, they feared and they trembled. And you can read, they even prayed unto Moses, saying, "Moses, pray for us that this will stop." They saw the august majesty of God, of the one that they were dealing with, not one to be trifled with, not one to just be casually handled or casually interacted with. He is not another man that we should interact with him as another man. This is surely the God of heaven. And it was a stark and a solemn reminder to them of the God with whom they were dealing. So the Lord gave instructions unto Moses, and he said, "This people, there's a danger here. They're not able to go up into the place that my presence is. They'll die. There's one man that's able, that I've called and summoned to come up into the mount, Moses himself. And other than that, you're to set boundaries around the mountain. Because whoever comes under the mountain and touches it," it didn't say a suggestion. It didn't say, "We recommend that you stay away from the mountain, or just keep enough of a distance." But the Lord in his mercy, and he didn't just allow, as people many times are of a curious nature, that the Lord, knowing of his, what would happen to mortal man who transgressed and went too close, and they began dropping off one by one, the Lord gave a warning unto them. You ever hear the phrase, or the word, rubbernecker? Many times in traffic, if there's a wreck or something, and you'll see traffic backed up sometimes for miles, it's not always because of the restriction of traffic in and of itself by the wreck, a lane being shut down. Many times as you get close to the wreck, or you're here on the radio, there are a lot of rubberneckers. That is, those who, out of curiosity, out of an interest and a desire to see more, "I want to know what happened. I want to see what's going on over there. So I want to slow down, and I'm going to go real slow once I get up to that point, to be able to see what's happened." You know, it would have been natural for these people to be curious. "Well, what's going on in the mountain? Had the Lord said, just keep your distance, don't get too close. Well, I wonder how close is too close. Well, I wonder just how close I can get. But the Lord told Moses, I want you to set some boundaries. I want you to draw some lines that, because you know the consequence of touching the mountain. I want to ask you a question. Where does a mountain start? Can you look at the ground and say, right here is where the mountain starts and the plain ends? This is the point that I can go, and I can't take another step, but I can get right up to this point, and legally, I'm okay. You know, the Lord didn't want him to get to the point where they're just as close to the line as they could possibly be. The press of people, if you've ever heard of folks being trampled in a stampede, they get into a concert or some venue where it's crowded and maybe there's a panic or something and people have lost their lives being stampeded. You know, there's something about being prepared for the unexpected. There's something about whenever it's consequential, whenever there's something important, I don't want to be right on the point where if everything goes just right, I'll be okay. If everything goes just as planned, I'm going to be all right. But the Lord said to Moses, you need to establish some boundaries. You need to establish some boundaries that say, don't get any closer, some margin. We see that in our roads and we're grateful for it. That there's some margin on the sides of the road. That if I should deviate just a little bit, if I should become distracted or something happens, and if you drive I-44 across Missouri, you may notice, it seems like the rumble strips are closer than most roads. And you may notice that sound, or maybe it's just my driving. But it's something that indicates you're starting to get too close. But I'm thankful that's not on the last 6 inches of the road before you hit that and it's over. There's a warning. There's a margin that's built in there for our safety, for our protection. Before you get to the point of no return, there's something that warns you, you need to stop here. And so it was with a boundary. We don't know exactly what this boundary was. It would seem to indicate that it was perhaps some kind of physical barrier. Then he erected and then he said, this is the point that for your own lives, for your own safety, this is the safe place. It's a margin. I wonder what might have been had Adam and Eve been receiving the instruction from the Lord of a tree that was in the midst of the garden that they were not to partake of. I wonder what it would have been had they gotten together and said, you know, that sounds like an awful consequence. You know, that sounds terrible. I don't want to ever see that happen. I don't want to ever die. I don't want to ever be thrust out of this garden. You know what? It'll never happen if I never go close to it. You know, Adam, let's agree. We're not going to go any closer than this. But instead, as she was wandering by, it would seem close to the tree. Close enough to see what the fruit looked like. Close enough to see that it was pleasant to the eyes. Close enough to hear the voice of the serpent. You know, we can put ourselves in a place that something happens. Where the unexpected happens, and I wonder why I stepped over the line. I wonder why I failed. I wonder why I just crashed. Because I put myself in a place where there was no margin. No margin of error. Worked some with EHS, Environmental Health and Safety, and OSHA, the regulatory agency that governs safety and so forth in the workplace. They give guidelines and the company will be audited periodically of how they're doing against those guidelines and the requirements of safe work conditions and so forth. You know, those restrictions are determined to an extent by the danger involved in what you're doing. There are what they consider to be high-risk operations. And in those high-risk operations, there's a wider margin of error than there is in something that doesn't have a lot of risk associated. For instance, with high voltage, there's a greater degree of danger, and so they'll draw very specifically wider margins of error. You don't go closer than this boundary, and whenever you do, here's how you do it, here's how you approach it, here's the protective equipment that you have to wear, because there's danger involved. This isn't something where you're going to get a tingle in your finger if you take a wrong step. Because of the nature of the consequence, there's a wider margin of error that you're to take. So is the general stance and approach of OSHA. Brother Rick Cox in our congregation back home was sharing recently, was in the construction industry, said that he had to get into a place and a job that he had to get a lift up by some high power lines. And he said it was a quick job. And it was tempting to go in, and he said, I think I could have made it. I think I could have gotten up there. But if not, I don't want to think of the consequence, for it would have been fatal. So he said he did what he felt like was the right thing. And he called the city, and they shut down the power to half the city for the amount of time required for him to get up and safely be able to disconnect that line, or they disconnected it temporarily so that he could get the work done. There's risk involved. You don't want to take a gamble whenever it involves your life. I'd like to consider 1 Chronicles, the 13th chapter. First Chronicles 13, beginning in the 7th verse. They carried the ark of God in a new cart out of the house of Abinadab, and Uzzah and Ahio drove the cart. And David and all Israel played before God with all their might, and with singing, and with harps, and with psalteries, and timbrels, cymbals, and with trumpets. And when they came unto the threshing floor of Shidon, Uzzah put forth his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and he smote him, because he put his hand to the ark. And there he died before God. Don't you know that got the attention of Israel? It certainly got the attention of David. David was very troubled over this. Lord, what is this breaking through? What is this that you've done here among us? And for a space of time, he didn't want the ark to be with him. But you know, you can fast forward a bit. They realize this isn't an option for the ark to just be removed out of our midst. We need to figure out how can we have the ark amongst us. And so we read in the 15th chapter, the 2nd verse, David said, "None ought to carry the ark of God but the Levites. For them hath the Lord chosen to carry the ark of God and to minister unto him forever." You know, that wasn't something that David had concocted. It was something that had been instructed years ago. You know, we can get into a place, if we're not careful in our lives, that we get so comfortable. We get so complacent in the things of God that I think I know how to handle it. That I think I know how to go about it. I think I know the right way. I think I can reason through what's acceptable and what's not. But what Uzzah did, got into a place that he was right there next to it. First of all, he was in a place where he was subject to that, where he could reach out his hand and touch it. There was a space that was to be given, and there was a certain way that they were to carry the ark that was being disregarded. David, as he was considering and looking on what had happened, said, you know, there are certain people that are supposed to be carrying this. The 15th verse, he said, "And the children of the Levites bear the ark of God upon their shoulders with the staves thereon, as Moses commanded according to the word of the Lord." Lord, help us not to get into a place in the time that we're living in that we get so comfortable and complacent with the things of God that I think it's about the way that I view it. It's about the way that I think this is okay. I think this is acceptable way to go about, a way to carry the ark, where I'm not searching the scriptures. I'm not looking to the Word of God. I've lost an element, if I'm not careful, of the fear of God from my heart, to where I get into a place that I'm comfortable with those things. And Uzzah paid for it by his life. The Lord had given instructions, as he has to us in the conduct of our lives, what he's pleased with and the way he wants us to conduct our lives. I'm thankful today that it's more than fear. I'm thankful, as we heard this afternoon, it's about more than just a fear of the consequences and the penalty of what we've done. Folks, the Lord wants us to have a love that motivates us, that constrains and compels us to do more than live marginally. To live marginally, the word marginal, it's barely meeting the minimum expectations. Barely over the threshold. I'm just barely there where I can say, well, I've technically met the requirements, but there's no margin of error. Where I'm just barely over the threshold of minimum requirements. Oh, Lord, help us not to live marginally. Not to live a life where I'm satisfied to barely meet the minimum. Worked in one place that was manufactured electronics, and in the course of my job, I got certification for circuit boards and soldering and so forth. And I learned in the process of that training that there are three different classes of certification for electronic manufacturing. And bear with me as I give you just a little bit of the detail of it. There's a class three. Well, I'll start with one. There's a class one of electronics. These classes determine how stringent the inspection requirements are. As you're inspecting and the quality of work that's done, class one is something that you might expect to find in a child's toy, where you push it and it'll sing to you, or it'll light up, or it'll do something, where if it fails to do that, it might be annoying, it might be disappointing to a child, but it's not very consequential. And you really don't want to pay the $500 that might be required for a higher level of quality. And so that's okay. And in a situation like that, in a use like that, there is then a class two. That's something that's a dedicated service. You might think of a microwave or an oven or a laptop or something like that that I do rely on. I want to be able to put my food in and push 30 seconds and something happens. I want to be able to open the laptop and be able to get done what I need to get done. But if it fails, generally it's not going to be life-threatening. If it fails, it's annoying. It may set me back a ways. I've got to make some other plans. That's class two. Class three is mission critical. Class three is whenever lives depend on it. There's no cutting corners then. On every inspection criteria, it says it must meet the criteria. There's some exceptions that are made if it's going into a fuzzy toy. You don't have to inspect quite so closely. You can cut some corners in the way it's manufactured. And there are reasons why a company would want to manufacture to a lower degree of quality. It doesn't take as long. There's a lower cost associated with it. It's easier to meet those criteria. And again, it's okay if it's in a plush toy. But I would dare say any of us that fly would like to have the assurance that the plane that we're flying on is going to be more reliable than that plush toy that I got from the dollar store. There's a requirement then. Well, what makes the difference? What makes the difference is the consequence of failure. It's the consequence of if this thing doesn't go right. If this thing should fail in the middle of operation, what's it going to do? Is it going to just not work, or is it going to mean a plane that goes down as a consequence? Mission critical. Many designs that are mission critical like that are designed to a margin of error. That we don't want to design it just to the point. We don't want to approach it to say it's marginally acceptable. We think it'll be okay for you to go fly on this plane. We think as long as everything goes all right. Well, we rolled it out onto the tarmac and everything, nothing fell off the wings. So we think you're going to be okay. I want to know that there's more stringent inspection than that. I want to know there's a higher degree of quality, because it's going to be more than a disappointing Christmas if this thing fails. It's going to be more than a toy that I got to go and return and get another one. It's much more consequential than that. Oh, Lord, help us to consider our souls and what's at stake. Folks, far too many people today are willing to gamble with their souls, are willing to cut the corners and lower the inspection criteria to say, you know, it's too high of a cost. You know, it's hard to meet the criteria. It's hard to meet the standard. And so for those circuit board manufacturers, that is a class one standard, a class one criteria. It's hard to meet that. Sometimes you've got to go back and do it again, and it requires additional work and investment and so forth to be able to do that. But it's worth it because of the consequence of it failing. Folks, there's something so much more critical than a toy not working. Something so much more critical than our laptop dying after 6 months. Dare I say, even something so much more critical than a plane staying in the air. For Jesus said, "Fear not him that destroys the body, and afterwards has nothing more that he can do." That's the end. That's all. There's something more than that. Fear him that's able to destroy both soul and body in hell. As Jesus said also, what does it profit a man if he should gain the whole world and at the end should lose his soul? Folks, the decisions that we're making in life, the way that we're living our lives from day to day, has eternal consequence. Are we living marginally? Or do we have some margin of error? I'd like to give another example, if you'll bear with me. In the military, there's a procedure that's known as all tools accounted for. I don't know for you men, using the example of tools, I don't know what your garage looks like. I know what mine does, and I'd rather you not see it at the moment. Whenever I go to look for a tool, I know where I think it's supposed to be. And if it's not there, I know three or four other places it might be. And some of those places include under trees and under leaves, and I'll let you guess how it gets to those places. But you know, it's not that consequential. It's annoying. Boys, where's my hammer? I may have to go spend another $20 to get another hammer. But that's about the extent of the consequence of it. But the military views it differently. Whenever you have an aircraft carrier, for example, they have issued on that not just a big storehouse of all kinds of tools and you go pick what you want or what you think you might need. They have it refined down to the exact tool, the exact wrench, everything that you're going to need for every procedure that's performed. And they have somebody that's in control of the tool room that you go and say, "I've got this job and this operation." And they say, "Here are the 7 tools that you need. They're issued out to you. You sign here and you're responsible for those 7 tools." If at the end of the shift or the accountability period, they come back and bring the tools back and they say, "Here's 6 tools." That's not good enough. They don't say, "Well, you know what? It's got to be around here somewhere," like I say. That's not enough. "Well, it's, you know what? Joe probably left it on his tool, in his toolbox or his lunchbox, and he left early today. I'm pretty sure that's where it is. Let's move on." It doesn't work that way. They shut down everything whenever they say there's one wrench that's missing somewhere on this aircraft carrier. And not only do they send everybody out to look for it, but they send a call out to everybody that's deployed, to planes that are in the air, wherever they are, and say, "All units return to base." Why? That seems pretty drastic. They're not just out there flying for fun. There's a reason why they're out deployed on their missions. And yet they get the call, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, all units report, return back to base immediately. Why? Because that missing wrench, that seventh tool, could well be in an engine that's become FOD or foreign object damage that could shut down the engine. And they don't want to leave anything to chance. They don't want to just look at it and say, well, you know what? I think it's going to be okay. You know what? Odds are, the chances are it's somewhere besides an engine. They look at it and assess the criticality of it. They assess the consequence of the worst case scenario, and they say it's not worth it. All units return back to base until we can account for that missing tool. Relax. Relax. You're wasting fuel. You're wasting time. You know, we face a skeptical, hostile world that says to us today, relax. Come on. It's not all that important. You know, you don't really have to go to those extents to please the Lord. Folks, it's not about our assessment or our opinion. It's about, Lord, what does your word say? What does your word say? Lord, I want to know what's acceptable to you. And I don't want to get into a legalistic mindset, for one. I don't want to take the approach, Lord, if this much is good, this much is better, let's don burkas. Lord, what is it that you're pleased with? I want to have a condition of heart. Oh, the scripture says, what carefulness it wrought in you. What vehement desire. I believe that use of the word carefulness means perhaps more an earnest forwardness or desire to please the Lord. I want to be careful to make sure my life is pleasing to the Lord. Oh, and you know, it can start out that way sometimes when I get saved and I'm determined, Lord, oh, I want to please you. Lord, whatever it takes. But over time, I can begin to get careless, as Uzzah did. I can begin to dwell carelessly and begin to get comfortable and begin to get accustomed to the way things are done and the way things aren't done and the what the saints expect and what I know until I begin to get into a place that it's a legalistic mindset. The Lord doesn't want us to get there where I say, well, you know what? I become a lawyer judging every one of my own cases to say, well, you know what? Here's the 10 reasons why I think that wrench is over somewhere else. Why I think it's okay. Here's why I think it's, why I shouldn't have to worry about this. Oh, Lord, would you teach us? Lord, would you help us to have the proper reckoning? And I pray the Lord would help us so this would be the backdrop to the decisions that we make. This is of eternal consequence. This isn't something that I can afford to have shoddy work this cheap and go pick up a dime a dozen. Lord, this is eternal. I want to do this right. Isaiah, the 47th chapter. Isaiah 47 and verse 8, therefore hear now this, thou that art given to pleasures, that dwellest carelessly, that sayest in thine heart, I am, and none else beside me. I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children. To those that have a false sense of security, that get into a place of complacence. You know it's so easy for any of us to do. It's so easy for us to begin to get desensitized. One of the things that OSHA teaches, or in at least our safety program, is the most dangerous operations are those with which an operator gets comfortable. The operator that says, you know, I've done this 100 times. And I don't even think about what I'm doing. I just run it through the machine one after another, and I begin to get so comfortable with it that I think I can maybe take a little shortcut here, maybe cut out a little time over here. Generally, those who are not familiar with it, I'm very aware, very nervous. I want to make sure that I'm doing it just right. So it can be with those who start out with the Lord. Lord, I want to please you. Lord, I want to make sure that my life is conforming in your sight. in your eyes. Lord, help us that we not get into a place that we dwell carelessly. Marginal living, barely meeting the minimum. I'll give you an example, one of many, of modesty. You know, I could say and acknowledge, the Lord is pleased with me to cover my body. So, you know, I could go, bear with me, I could go get a shirt that comes right to the waist of my pants. And I say, folks, as I'm standing here like this, I'm modest. Everything's all right. I've measured up. I've conformed to the letter. I've done everything that I need to do. But you know, the reality is, I'm going to want to go live life. The reality is, I'm probably going to need to go reach for something. Or if I should decide that I wanted to go play volleyball with the young people, chances are that's not going to meet minimum. I don't want to live marginally. I hope you understand my meaning here. In so many facets of our lives, to say, Lord, am I living marginally? Have I gotten into a place that I'm so comfortable with things and I've started cutting one corner after another until little by little I've given up so much ground that I can't even afford to move. Because I'm barely meeting the minimum. Barely meeting the threshold. I don't believe that's the Lord's desire nor the way that we have to live. Nor do I find it to be a straitjacket. Thank the Lord. I'd like to close in 1 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter. Oh, I want to commend to you, everyone. Fall in love with the Lord. You know, it answers the question of marginality. It answers the question of just how far I have to go. Fall in love with the Lord. 1 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter. 10th verse. According to the grace of God which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest. For the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire. And the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. You know, the Lord has a way of sending fire in our lives. It's kind of like the testing that we would expect of aircraft, a Boeing Dreamliner that was rolled out a number of years ago. They were testing the wings to see how much it would flex as it does in flight. And they set a goal that we want to be able to flex those wing tips 25 feet up in the air. Looked like a seagull that was flying. But we want to know, whenever this thing gets out into some strong turbulence, we don't expect it to ever flex 25 feet, but we want to know. We're going to put it to the test. You know, the Lord in His mercy sometimes will send the fire our way. We'll send some testing our way. They did that even more recently, shown in the news of the last couple of weeks. They did that and they had a failure. And they're going back and evaluating what caused that failure. You know, it's the mercy of the Lord and the dispensation in which we live today to cause us to realize, Lord, I stumbled and fell. Lord, there's some cracks developing here. Lord, is there something that I need to reinforce? Lord, how am I building my life? Let every man take heed how he builds. That we not settle for shoddy, haphazard work in our lives, for marginal living. That I not get into a place where I become so comfortable and complacent that I settle for something that sets me up down the road to lose my soul. Folks, there's nothing worth that. May every one of us determine hell's not an option. I'm determined, whatever it takes, Lord, I want to make it. I want to be faithful. I want to hear those words, well done, thou good and faithful servant. You pray for me.
Amen.